Ann and I just returned from 8 days in Montego Bay, Jamaica. It was our 30th visit there, but I had never taken notice of the security walls. From the time we left Sanger Airport, we encountered wall after wall around businesses and private residences. Walls not erected to hate people on the outside, but for love and security of those on the inside. As always, it's great to be back home. We've traveled to more than 80 countries around the world, but there is no place on earth that rivals the United States. Our country is not perfect. But compared to what? Compared to the rest of the world, we are as perfect as humankind can be. Sadly, most don't take the time to consider what their lives would be like outside the security of America. I hope you'll stay tuned today while I speak of the Democrats' obsession with aborting babies. I believe my research on the subject will touch you deeply. But first, let me speak to the issue of the wall on the border between Mexico and the United States. You'll remember that Nancy Pelosi called such a wall immoral. Was she right? Building a great wall between the United States and Mexico to keep out illegal immigrants and stop the flow of drugs into America was the centerpiece of President Trump's campaign, and he has fought Democrats to keep that promise. The subject gained momentum back in February 2016 when Pope Francis, in a veiled shot at President Trump, said, quote, "A person who thinks only about building walls, wherever they may be, and not building bridges, is not Christian," unquote. The Pope was joined in the United States by the liberal fake news media, Hollywood, and Democrats in condemning a border wall. So what does the Bible teach on all of this? Would God or Jesus build a border wall? You might be surprised to learn that the Bible is filled with verses speaking of walls. The words wall or walls are used 245 times in the Bible. Many of these speaking of walls like a border wall. Security walls were nearly always built around cities in the Bible. Many of those walls were huge. It's said that the wall surrounding Babylon was 387 feet high and 87 inches thick. The primary use for walls was for the protection from those who lived outside the city, as well as protection from wild animals. They kept unauthorized people from entering the city and also protected the people of the city from attack. This sounds like why President Trump and many others want to build a wall between the United States and Mexico, doesn't it? But the question remains, did God approve of doing this? It seems clear that he did. The clearest example that is most used is in the book of Nehemiah. In chapter 1, Nehemiah received word that, quote, "The wall of Jerusalem is also broken down, and its gates are burned with fire," unquote. Upon hearing this, Nehemiah fasted and prayed to God. Shortly afterwards, Nehemiah made a request to the king to return to Jerusalem and rebuild the wall that had been destroyed. The king granted his request. After Nehemiah arrived and surveyed the damage by night, Nehemiah, 2nd chapter, verses 17 and 18, it records him as saying to the people, quote, "Then said I unto them, Ye see distress that we are in, how Jerusalem lieth in waste, and the gates thereof are burned with fire. Come and let us build up the wall of Jerusalem, that we be no more a reproach. Then I told them of the hand of my God, which was good upon me, as also the king's words that he had spoken unto me. And they said, Let us rise up and build. So they strengthened their hands for this good work," unquote. That wall was finished in 52 days. God was behind this work to rebuild the security wall around Jerusalem. However, as you read these chapters in Nehemiah, you will see that they faced opposition from many people who did not want a wall to be built or rebuilt. In particular, two men named Sanballat and Tobiah were leading the charge to stop it. Some compare that opposition to the opposition we see today from Nancy Pelosi, Chuck Schumer, and their Democratic Party in building a wall on our southern border. This example in Nehemiah is not the only example of God ordaining wall building in the Bible. King Solomon and Asa also built security walls to surround God's cities. God instructed that his tabernacle be surrounded by a 7.5-foot high fence. God's temple had a security wall around it. Is Nancy Pelosi telling us that God himself is immoral? The Democrats' opposition to a wall between the United States and Mexico stems solely from their intense hatred for Donald Trump. These same Democrats, in the past, voted to fund such a wall, and portions of that wall have already been built. If those portions of the wall are immoral, let Democrats tear them down. Simply put, Pelosi and Schumer hate Trump more than they value security for the United States. The president will give his State of the Union address on February 5th, tomorrow night, a perfect time to call this illegal immigration problem a threat to national security and use the powers of the presidency to build the wall. Democrats, of course, will scream like the hypocrites they are, and lawsuits will be filed to stop the president from fulfilling his promise to the American people. The latest government shutdown cost the United States economy more than $11 billion, all so that Democrats could deny the president $5.7 billion for a security wall. All for Pelosi and Schumer to be able to race before the fake news media cameras and proclaim some kind of victory. Trump is not asking for money to fly his relatives on vacation, as Pelosi tried to do. He isn't asking for new furniture for the Oval Office. What he's asking for is $5.7 billion to stop border infiltration and illicit drug and human trafficking. Shame on Democrats who favored the wall under Clinton and Obama, but who now oppose the wall simply to try and stop Donald Trump from keeping his promise to the American people. Pelosi lied when she said that if Trump reopened the government, the Democrats would negotiate with him in good faith. Trump called her bluff, and the American people see what a conniving liar Nancy Pelosi is. Changing subjects. Democrats and liberals are obsessed with mindless abortion. First, there was their argument about when life begins, but Democrats have abandoned that argument, and now they push for abortions right up to the minute of birth. Some, like Debbie Wasserman Schultz, believe that it should be legal to kill a newborn baby even after it has been delivered. When Senator Rand Paul asked Schultz, who was then head of the Democratic National Committee, whether she believed that aborting full-term 7-pound babies should be legal, her response was that an abortion on a full-term child was the mother's constitutional right. Schultz is not alone in Democratic circles. Bear with me, please, because what I'm about to describe is painful to hear. I doubt you've ever heard it. But every American needs to hear the truth. At just 4 months, 16 weeks of pregnancy, here's the status of an unborn child. The body is fully formed. The fingers and toes have fingerprints and fingernails. It's about 5 inches long and weighs about 3 ounces. The baby at that stage is moving about. It may grasp for the umbilical cord, suck its thumb, and is capable of making facial expressions and kicking. The baby's heart and circulatory system and the urinary tract are fully functioning, and blood is pumping through its tiny veins. The baby at 16 weeks is inhaling and exhaling the amniotic fluid through its lungs. The eyes are in the proper position, and the baby can see straight ahead and blink his or her eyelids. The genitals have formed. In the case of a girl, the uterus is already developed, and the ovaries are in the proper place. This is after 16 weeks. Actually, unborn babies have the ability to interact as early as 14 weeks into the pregnancy. They are not simply a glob of tissue, as Democrat elites would have you believe. Quite obviously, the Democratic Party is no longer about abortion being safe, legal, and rare, as the Clinton-era party platform claimed. The party has been hijacked by extremist liberals and socialists and is now unabashed in its support for abortion through all 9 months of pregnancy. As the Federalist pointed out, as extreme as this position is, it is by no means the Democrat Party's most extreme with regard to abortion. Here are some of the positions of the Democratic Party and most of its leaders that are arguably even more extreme. First, Democrats support aborting babies for race, sex, and Down syndrome reasons. They have strongly opposed state and federal bills prohibiting abortions sought because of the unborn child's race or sex. When the U.S. House of Representatives considered the Prenatal Non-Discrimination Act of 2012, which would have prevented abortions because of the father's race or the unborn child's sex, Democrats opposed the bill by a vote of 161-20. A party that describes itself as a champion of women and minorities has been willing to sacrifice those principles for abortion. A North Dakota bill prohibiting abortion because of Down syndrome did pass, but with fierce Democratic objection. Democrats do not just support aborting 7-pound babies up to the minute before birth. They apparently support aborting 7-pound babies even when they are targeted because they're girls, or their father was black, or they might have a disability. How many babies have been aborted in the United States alone since Roe v. Wade? 61,023,350. Since 1970, Planned Parenthood has aborted 8,318,246 human lives. A disproportionate share of abortions happen to black children. Since 1973 in the United States, 18,307,005 black babies have been aborted. Where, oh where, are the Black Lives Matter protesters? Everyone should be able to agree that women should be made aware of their options before having an abortion. Unfortunately, Democrats all too often don't share that view. In recent years, Democrats, at the behest of abortion advocacy groups, have gone on the offensive against nonprofit organizations that provide women with information about abortion alternatives. Most recently, in California, Democrats proposed an unconstitutional bill to force those pro-life pregnancy centers to refer women for abortions. In effect, Planned Parenthood can claim only a handful of adoption referrals while performing roughly 330,000 abortions at almost $500 every year. Planned Parenthood is one of the biggest electoral boosters and contributors to the Democratic Party. Back in the day, in the wake of Roe v. Wade, Democrats like Ted Kennedy spoke on the floor of the Senate to defend the right of pro-life medical professionals and hospitals not to have to perform abortions against their conscience. Today, Democrats don't just support aborting fully formed babies. They want to force pro-life doctors to perform that gruesome procedure. Not content to simply make abortion legal through all 9 months, they want you to foot the bill. The federal Hyde Amendment, which provides some protection against taxpayer funding for abortion, passed over Democratic objection and continues to be in the Democratic Party's crosshairs. As it stands today, with Hyde in place, hundreds of millions of taxpayer dollars still go to abortionists. Without the Hyde Amendment, it would be hundreds of millions more, as taxpayer funds could be used to directly pay for abortions. But it doesn't end there. Democrats don't just want to force you to pay abortion through your taxes. Some of them want to force you to pay for abortion from your church offering plate. In California, a Democratic administration has illegally forced every health plan in the state, including those that churches provide for their pastors, to cover abortions. Democrats don't just want abortions of fully formed babies. Many of them also want you and your church to pay for them. Democrats use the word choice to cause us to focus on something other than the reality of what abortion really is. Simply put, there is no clean and humane way to kill a fully formed, full-term baby. Recently, when an Oklahoma bill prohibiting dismemberment abortions came about, the ripping of unborn children apart, when it became law, Democrats were the only votes against it. Think about this. If a woman has carried a child for 9 months, why would she not want to birth the child and put it up for adoption rather than have it killed? Planned Parenthood and other abortion mills do not try to discuss a woman's option, such as adoption. They are all too eager to abort life. Since the legalization of abortion, child abuse has increased over 1,000%. This is the exact opposite of what those who legalized abortion said it would do, since it was assumed then that only children who were unwanted were abused. In Psalm 106, God speaks specifically against killing innocent children and babies. He says of his people, quote, "They mingled with the nations and adopted their customs. They worshipped their idols, which became a snare to them. They sacrificed their sons and daughters to demons. They shed innocent blood, the blood of their sons and daughters, whom they sacrificed to the idols of Canaan, and the land was desecrated with their blood." Unquote. Today we may wonder in disbelief how anybody could sacrifice their child to an idol or a demon. Yet an idol is anything we worship before God. Today children are sacrificed to idols of selfishness, convenience, freedom, and ambition, sacrificed to the very demonic powers that are behind such idols. In Exodus 21st chapter 22nd verse, God gives a specific law regarding social order for the Israelites. He stated that if two men were fighting and they hit a pregnant woman, thus causing her to give birth prematurely, they must be fined according to any damage done to the baby. If God would make a law specifically referring to the rights of the unborn, then surely the unborn must mean something to him. Why would God give a specific law referring to the rights of the unborn if the unborn was not a life? It has been stated that if the womb had windows, there would be no abortion. God said to the prophet Jeremiah, quote, "Before I formed you in the womb, I knew you. Before you were born, I set you apart." End quote. Jeremiah chapter 1, verse 5. God knew this man before he was born. As he was forming in his mother's womb, God gave him his personality, talents, and temperament. If his mother had gotten an abortion, the so-called fetal tissue would have still been a real person named Jeremiah, though she would never have known him. There are many biblical references to life inside the mother's womb. From them, it is clear that life begins when God creates it, not some later point in time when it has grown to look like a newborn. Every 20 seconds, another baby is aborted in this country. Yet very few people seem to notice, much less care. Statistically, one out of every three of us die by abortion, and we will never know what we lost in those lives. Our country goes along its way, leaving lawmakers to decide how the carnage should continue. We've bought into the lie that those we dispose of are not real people. It's the same old lie that was used to keep slavery legal and to exterminate masses of people in Holocausts all over the world. We should be able to see through this by now, but as usual, most of us let circumstances and the current cultural climate dictate to us what is acceptable and what is not. Think about this. We put warnings on cigarettes and alcohol that their consumption is dangerous to an unborn child. Yet we deem it perfectly legal, even responsible, for a mother to have a doctor poison that same child inside her or rip it to threads with a surgical instrument. We charge a man who kills a woman with double homicide. Yet, what if that woman was on her way to abort the unborn child? And how can it be a double homicide if the unborn child is not a human being? These questions are not as complex as they are made out to be. Each of us has to make our own decision about how we feel about abortion, and each of us will answer for that decision on the day of judgment. Of course, if you are an agnostic or an atheist who believes there is no God, you have no decision to make, but you do have the same consequences. For me, I feel the need to speak up for the unborn children who cannot yet speak for themselves. We increasingly see women celebrating abortion, but taking the life of an unborn human being is no cause for celebration. There are many couples in America who cannot have children, but would love to adopt an unwanted child. Abortion mills like Planned Parenthood should be counseling pregnant women as to that option, but they choose instead to encourage adoption, or rather abortion, not adoption. While I do have sympathy for a young woman who finds herself pregnant when it was not wanted, I also have sympathy for the unborn child. The woman had many ways to prevent an unwanted pregnancy. The unborn child had no choice. When the strident voices for abortion, when choice rings out from them, think about that. Who had the choice?